So once again, welcome to our gathering tonight. A couple of weeks ago, my partner Robin and I were on retreat in the midst of this striking, really forested land nearby here. And in this area, this forested land that we're in, it felt like we were being fully immersed, you could say, in the embrace of that land that was surrounding us. And while we were out there on our meditation retreat, sometimes what struck me so deeply was this palpable absence. There was this palpable absence out there on this forested land. And it was the absence of human constructs, right? There were no buildings out there. Or streets or sidewalks or billboards or cars out there that were interrupting the landscape. And instead, there was only the presence of juniper and pinyon trees and some of those majestic, tall ponderosa pines that, if you're here in Flagstaff, you know so well. The Apache plume, those sturdy presences of rocky outcroppings. And then the sounds of the wind blowing through the trees, the birds, the raspy call of scrub jays or the high-pitched trill of the juniper titmouse or those, you know, those gargles, those squawks and clicks from ravens. And there we were. It was with such a presence of the more than human world and such an absence of the human. And in that context, especially kind of being supported with this practice of being present, what I discovered is I found my heart and my mind could so easily attune to a different way of perceiving the world, which is so important on this path and this practice, a different way of beholding or attuning to the world. And what it was is it was a way of perceiving that wasn't kind of shackled by a narrow human-centric perspective, but a way of perceiving that had this felt sense of being interwoven into like a much larger tapestry. It felt freeing. And what came that with that was also a feeling of not being special or unique. Just another member of one of the many species on this planet. Not apart, not dominant, rather interwoven. And one of the reasons I'm sharing with you this experience is of this different way of perceiving is it's because, as I said, it's a significant dimension of Buddhist meditative practice. This process of learning to kind of, it's like I'm learning to attune to different ways of perceiving. And in particular, attuning to different ways of perceiving that can liberate this heart and mind from, you could say, the harmful reactivity that is so harmful for either myself or others or both. And it is, you find this training in a different way of beholding or perceiving experience kind of interwoven through many different practices. So, for example, in the practice of loving kindness meditation, maybe many of you have done that practice of cultivating loving kindness. And what I've noticed is it's I'm learning how to attune to or to perceive the goodness in myself or others. And then when I'm really taking in that goodness, where I'm feeling that goodness of others or myself, what naturally arises is kindness. There's a sense of love and friendliness. Or I'm learning how to attune or to perceive the suffering of others or myself in a way that quality of caring, it fills my heart, it fills my mind, rather than being overwhelmed by suffering or disconnected from it. So these practices that we can engage in on this path that change how I perceive experience, and then when I perceive experience differently, that changes how I relate to experience. And then how I relate to experience when that changes, then I act differently in the world. And as a practitioner, as I would say, like in this contemporary world, I feel it's crucial for me to broaden my approach to these ways of perceiving that the Buddha offers, especially amidst the prevalent and the current dimensions of suffering and angst that I'm confronted with in this contemporary world. Another way to put it is I find that what I need to do to be a practitioner is I need to imagine, how would the Buddha teach if he was here tonight? What would he be sharing with us? What would be on his mind and in his heart? How would he teach knowing that next week is Earth Day? And here we are situated in this current ecological crisis that rages on. And it does, it rages on. I'm sure many of you know that. Some of you might know this the study that was done in 2022, the Living Planet Report, where what they discovered, this publication, what it revealed is that the average decline of wildlife species populations since 1970, it's declined by 69%. It's a massive loss of wildlife population. And that's even more devastating in Latin America and the Caribbean, where the average decline is much higher. 94% of the populations have disappeared. And so I imagine him sitting here right now with us. And here he is. He's the Buddha with this heart that's so sensitive to such devastation. And I can only help but imagine that he would be encouraging us to step out of that human-centric way of perceiving the world. Just as I was talking about that experience I had when I was outside, and instead stepping into this more interwoven, heartfelt perception that I was sharing with you. How could he not teach something like that? And I want to be really clear when I'm sharing this with you. Like, I don't think this way of perceiving is going to be the solution to the current ecological crisis. I think that would be a little bit too Pollyannish. And at the same time, I do find that it's a crucial component within a, you could say, a larger tapestry of other components, which are moving in an onward leading direction in this situation. So crucial and interwoven, hopefully, with other components. Because I do really feel, as I said, you know, how we perceive the world is a huge factor in how we understand the world. And how I'm understanding the world is a huge factor in how I act in the world. Right? If a person perceives forested land or wild salmon or shrimp or crabs simply in terms of economic value, you could say as commodities for human consumption, rather than the perception, as seeing such beings as living beings who have this intrinsic value in their beingness in and of themselves. Right? With such a perception, what happens? Harm happens easily with little thought. You know, what comes to mind when I think of these different ways of perceiving, I think of, some of you might know this tribe, the Nisqually tribe in Washington. And their perception, I find really striking and inspiring. For them, they perceive salmon, which is such a part of their life and their world outlook, as this gift from the Salmon King. Like they're these amazing beings that inhabit this earth, interwoven with us. And as a result of that, it's so incredible. You know, they do so much to protect salmon in terms of habitat restoration and other conservation practices. They're in this reciprocal relationship with these other beings that they have great respect for. And can you hear in that? Oh, here is this kind of perception of being interwoven into a much larger tapestry of life, rather than this perception of just me as a human being. One of the classical ways that the Buddha encourages us to engage in is to perceive the not-self quality in experience, or you could say the selfless quality within experience, because it can really free our hearts. And so I want to share a little bit about just getting a little bit of a taste of what would it be to perceive that aspect of experience, that it has a selfless nature to it. Or at least that's one way of perceiving it. And there's this Dharma teacher, Philip Moffat, and I love how he talks about this. He talks about perceiving not self is this process of stepping out of perceiving in a different way. It's stepping out of perceiving ourselves as being the star of the movie all the time. Because that's what our minds do. Have you ever noticed this? At least I've noticed this. It's like my mind, it's like continually creating these movie scenes. And you know what? I'm the main character of that movie scene. The argument with that person I'm still thinking about from last week. The discussion I need to have with that other person next week. I'm always the main character. Isn't that a trip? Noticing the selfless nature of experience allows me to begin to step out of that. And I want to be clear, this is not about self-denial. It's rather opening to a broader range of perspectives, like what I began the talk with. To learning to perceive experience in the world that's expansive, rather than getting confined by meanness. And I want to be clear, there's nothing wrong with thinking about yourself. But hopefully you've noticed, like me, there can be something so confining. And not only that, that my mind can make me as the main character of the movie. We do this in terms of the particular species that we are, namely being human beings. My mind has been conditioned to perceive human beings as the main characters in the movie. Have you noticed that this is always happening around you? Just the news. What's the news about? It's about human beings. Or often when I read about climate change or ecological crisis, guess what it's mostly about? How it affects human beings. It's always turning towards, you know, the world and turning the world toward human purposes, human aims. And yes, sometimes you can find exceptions to this in the news, and may that continue. But have you noticed this? And not only that, we can find these narratives, really dominant narratives, in dominant society that reflect this. For example, we have these people, these two people, Adam and Eve. You ever heard of Adam and Eve? It's such an interesting story, right? They get created out of clay, and then they get plopped down on this earth that has been created with all these creatures beforehand. And then they get plopped on this earth, and then they're told that they're here to rule the world, to have dominion over the other creatures. As it says, over the fish and the sea and the birds and the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and have dominion over all the creatures that move along the ground. So here it is, even really so fundamental to that story. And this is different than getting a sense of, oh, I'm an arising together with this earth and the creatures and the trees. Oh, this body, this mind and this heart, it's been shaped by them. And I just want to linger with that because I think it's so helpful, at least for me, to slow down to really get the sense of, oh, it's actually quite different than that story. That this mind and body have been shaped by the earth and her creatures. Right? With the eyes, what the eyes see, you could say the activity of these eyes right now, for most of us, it's been shaped by by millions of years of things like flowers and grasses and mammals. These see in a particular way because they've been influenced by these other things in the environment. The eyes are positioned on the head in a particular place from this whole shaping process of millions of years. It's been shaped by the earth and her creatures. What the ears hear and how they hear. The functioning and the placement and the design of the ears. To get a sense of that, that arose out of a relationship with things like the sound of the wind, the sound of streams, a growl, or a bird song. Even the skin, it arises over millions of years out of this relationship with a cool breeze or a hot and humid day, or the spray of salt water from the ocean, or the touch of another mammal, or the spine of a cactus. Oh, I'm a co-arising. I've been shaped by this earth and her creatures. Sometimes when I'm walking, I get a little tripped out about how my body knows how to walk. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, it really is quite amazing. It's like the body's continually has this attunement and adjustment that's happening, as it's going over rocky terrain or up a steep mountain slope. And most of the time, I'm not fully aware of it. I mean, thank God that I'm not fully aware of it and have to be conscious and do all that. I mean, it would not work if I was the one doing that. Had it come to be like that? Because it was shaped, it arose with this earth. And I think in just as a way to contrast that one dominant narrative that comes from dominant society is that there are many indigenous creation stories which lend themselves to this different way of perceiving our place in the unfolding of this world. Right? In the Salinan tribe, there's a story of bald eagle creating humans. Or the Ohlone, a story of Coyote creating humans with the help of bald eagle, or the Miwok people. Coyote creating humans from the feathers of a turkey vulture, a raven, and a crow. Or closer to home here, the ancestral Puebloans and the Hopi and the Navajo. Many of you know a part of their creation story is sometimes around humans entering the world out of a sipapu, out of an opening in the earth. These are really different stories. From the beginning, it's about relationship, this kinship with other beings on this earth and the earth herself. This is a very different movie. It's not a movie where I'm the main character. It's not even a movie where human beings are the main character. It's a whole cascade of characters that are in relationship with another, in kinship with one another. And when I was out there on retreat, it's just so much easier for me to feel that kinship, to feel that I'm just a living being amongst other living beings that have deep intrinsic value, just as I have intrinsic value. So does the Apache plume right next to me. It has intrinsic value to it. And you find resonances of this in this Theravada tradition of Buddhism. There's a great story. So sometimes this is a story told around this practice of loving kindness that I was sharing with you about. So the story goes, once upon a time, there were a group of monastics and they had found this super sweet place to meditate in the forest. This is during the rains retreat. So the rains retreat is a time that was happening in India. For 3 months, monastics would stay put. And the reason why they would stay put is it helped the villagers with their growing so that the plants weren't getting trounced upon. So they loved it. They found this place to practice in the forest. And this particular place in the forest, it was home to a whole group of tree deities living in the trees. And at first, the tree spirits, they were totally cool with the monastics. Because they thought that the monastics were only going to be there for a couple of nights. So they're thinking, oh, this is okay. They're going to be here. They're going to do their thing. They're going to leave. And then we get to have our space back to ourselves. But then the spirits realized the monastics weren't planning on going anywhere anytime soon. And they didn't like this. So they decided to get together. And then what they would do is they'd go around frightening the monastics whenever they could, terrifying them, making scary noises, letting out foul odors, making ghoulish apparitions. As a result of this, life was not going well for the monastics. So of course, what did they do? They asked the Buddha, "What should we do? This is a bad scene. Like all these tree spirits are giving us a hard time, and here we are in the middle of our rains retreat." And so, what the Buddha said to him is, what you need to do is you need to practice loving kindness towards them. They'll love it, I promise. And when they started to do that, the deities were so touched and moved by this. They felt nourished and supported by these hearts filled with kindness in their forest. And then, as the stories always go, they lived happily ever after, of course. And then the monastics got awakened. But what I love about this is that it's this valuing coming into this skillful and heartful relationship with other beings of the forest through kindness. And as a result of that, it evokes, just like with the Nisqually tribe and the salmon, this relationship of reciprocity, where I'm re in relationship with other beings, where I'm taking care of other beings and those beings are taking care of me. And really, that's the basis of our community here. This is why we have this as a Dana-based community, one that we're offering things freely. And then if people want, they can donate something or donate time to really to practice reciprocity with one another, to be in kinship in this way, to step out of domination, to step out of transaction. So I just want to offer just a few more reflections on how close it is where I can sense into feeling being a living being amongst other living beings. So for example, right now, the air you breathe is such a connection to this fact. So supposedly more than half of the oxygen you're breathing right now most likely comes from what are called marine photosynthesizers like plankton and seaweed. So the oxygen I'm breathing has been given to me by other living beings right now. That's what's keeping me alive. It's incredible. They're that close. So here in every single breath I'm taking, it's connected with my relationship with another living being. And you could say it's even closer than that. Even this body here that you can feel right now, right? Supposedly, my statistic is correct. 43% or 43-ish percent of the cells in your body are human cells. And then the rest, 56%, are the cells of bacteria. You're not even mostly a human being. You just decided to join that club for, I don't know why, that reason. But here, isn't that a trip? Like, here I'm claiming to be part of the species, and most of me is not part of that species in one way or another. I have this kinship with other living creatures. So I offer these reflections to see how they resonate so that you can, maybe if this resonates, to find places where you can perceive differently. So may we attune to a different way of perceiving the world. A way of perceiving that isn't shackled by a narrow human-centric perspective, but rather a way of perceiving that has this felt sense of being interwoven into a much larger tapestry. Thank you. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.